scary.
All right, Commissioner, you're ready to roll.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting for a work session today. It is Monday, February 3rd, approximately 2 p.m. The work session is on case number PU11-696, Basin Electric Cooperative's AVS Tenessa 345 KV line. We've certainly had lots of work over the last while on this. This is, I think, our first work session in quite some time on this, maybe even our first as a group since the project started. I have some comments, I guess, but I'll hold those till we get deeper into the session. Just ask Commissioner Crispin if you have any opening thoughts or guidance, and then Julie, and then I'll go from there.
No guidance except for the one opening thought that I found it interesting in our hearing regarding gasification plants in McKenzie County, that the McKenzie County Electric person was really, really concerned about their ability to keep the lights on up there.
To meet their load? Absolutely.
And really appreciative of the fact that we're having the hearing on the gas plants and those, that potential development, but also very concerned about this because their growth is phenomenal. And that was the only thing I was going to point out, but I just thought it very interesting when we had that hearing.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Fedorchak.
I don't have any opening comments.
Okay, perfect. Maybe I guess what I'll do is I know that we have an order that we can go through. I have a bunch of questions before I even get to the order, but maybe what I would do is turn it over to Mitch next. And Mitch, do you have any outstanding issues that you think we should address first in a way of priority, or how do you want to run your point across here as our counsel?
I would think it would just be more addressing it as we go through the order. I mean, I think from the hearings, we know what kind of the issues that need to be talked about or worked through are, you know,
okay,
the battlefield, the grasslands areas, things like that. And
all right, sounds good.
Draft order addressing those.
Well, and maybe what I'll do is before maybe rephrase here. How much time does everybody have for this? Because I have the sense we could be here 3 hours, or we could just say we're here 1 hour today and we come back. I definitely have 1 hour. I don't know what you guys.
I'm pretty open.
Okay.
I can go beyond some, but not 3 hours.
Okay. Well, let's go no later than 3:30 is what we'll put as a constraint on ourselves then. And if we get done early then, does that work for you, Jer?
Sure.
Sure. No, if you have something going on, Jer, that's fine.
No, I'm good.
Mitch, is that still?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. And we may be long done before then, but before we get into the order, which I'm not against going through that, I did want to clarify some things just to make sure I'm understanding all the different things at play. Okay.
Before I start,
yes, sir.
Whose portfolio is this?
This would be mine.
Okay.
Unless you want to reorganize portfolios, then we could.
Nope.
Okay. The abstract on the, I'm looking at the supplemental draft EIS. Walk through that Basin started their draft EIS, and they prepared a supplemental draft. Now, was the purpose of that supplemental draft the way Jerry and Mitch or whoever would be to answer questions that came up in the hearing, or was that something that was already in the works before the hearings that we held took place?
I believe it was already in the works, and the main purpose of it was to add that North Kildare loop into the existing EIS. I think it had been listed as an alternative before, and they wanted it as a proposed line rather than an alternative they weren't doing.
Okay.
And
demand increase, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was demand increases all in that area, and so this loop was needed. And this loop isn't part of this application, nor is the substation that would connect this loop into this proposed line here. They'll file a new siting application for those later.
Sure, but this was in the works and the draft supplemental, if you will, the supplemental before our hearings ever took place.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Say that
too.
Again about the that, because looking at the draft supplemental.
It is in the
EIS. The routes are very different.
It's in the EIS as proposed, but not in this permit application. They'll have to give us another permit application to permit that loop.
And that's one of the things that I was going to get Mitch's thoughts on, is that it's very, I won't say confusing, but it's very, we have to draw very close detail to our role as state jurisdiction on siting to what's going on in the federal EIS. One is we could use it as a additional tool. The other is it's a whole different process. What would your reaction to that be, Mitch?
Probably both.
Probably both, yeah, exactly. So I don't want to get too hung up on things that are in the EIS and the supplemental EIS, but they may have weight or bearing in what we're doing is one of the struggles that I'm having right now.
Well, as was discussed at the hearing, I mean, the basin needs several approvals to go forward. I mean, if the commission approves their route and corridor and the EIS approves something else,
right,
they're in a bit of a pickle. Even if the commission approves what the route and corridor in front of it right now and the EIS doesn't approve it, as they testified, they can't build it.
Well, that's what I was trying to get through. When you look at, I guess this is going to the order a little bit, but I think this might just bear out some more discussion. When you have a supplemental EIS that says they still have to study things to draw conclusions on preferred alternatives, and then to us to go in and to say why we deem some of these alternatives as not reasonable, it just sets it up as something that I need some more explanation on. And that's one of the big things that I would have as a point of discussion, I guess.
You know, in the past, I think the two processes have kind of looked to each other. If the EIS... If we get done first, I think the EIS will take notice of our decision, and then we'll require that the agencies that are doing the EIS, that their FONSI, finding of no significant impact, be filed with us before they begin construction.
Well, and I looked through that, Jerry, in the back, and I know we're jumping all over for my colleagues, but we have a finding in this draft one that says, Basin Logistics shall file with the commission a copy of the final federal EIS and resulting findings prior to beginning of construction. It doesn't say finding of no significant impact. It just says resulted findings. So there's some difference in what you just said to what's in the draft. And I the SHPO concurrence, I like that idea. In previous cases, we've had a federal nexus that we've dealt with, like in a wind, the big basin wind farm. We voted long before the EIS was done, and we said, get to your FONSI, and then we'll be fine with it. But there, they weren't talking about whole-scale changes in turbine location. It was just impacts based on what the locations were. Now we're talking about potentially a whole change in the route of a power line. And so I see that as different than what we may have done in the past.
If they don't approve the route that we permitted, well, then they can't just build the other route. I mean, our route is as permitted, and they need to come back to us if it's not going to work for them and get something else permitted.
I agree with that statement, but I'm just saying, why would you do that until the whole thing has flushed itself out?
Why would we issue our decision before the FONSI?
Yes, because this case, I think there's more at play than just a static location of wind turbines. There's a major, I shouldn't say major, there's a different, I see that as different, I guess. Maybe you could explain to me, you or Mitch, why that's not different.
I think what Commissioner Kalk is saying, Jerry, is they're going through the NEPA and EIS process with the routes having... There's a route that could be the preferred route through that process that's not even within our route or corridor. And in the wind farm, at least it's all still within the site.
Could I state it this way? Because I have the same question. who benefits in any way by us approving a route that isn't the preferred route that finally gets the approval by the federal EIS process? What's it? Who has any advantage to us doing that?
If we approve a route that differs from the one that the feds approve or select, there was no benefit gained. They'll have to come back and ask us to reconsider. If we give our order before the feds give theirs, it's one more factor that the feds can give weight to in their process, that they have a permit for this order, for this route, from the state. So there is an effect of issuing a decision before the FONSI comes out, and it'll be noticed by the agencies.
Don't we always defer to this SHPO on cultural resource stuff?
Yes.
And the SHPO hasn't weighed in on this yet either.
They haven't given a final concurrence, but they've weighed in on a couple of things.
Yeah.
See, the way I viewed that, that's a great point. The difference, I like the idea of saying that we can do things and then they have to have SHPO concurrence, but usually SHPO concurrence doesn't involve wholesale changes in siting. It's things that the company can go above and beyond doing, so it doesn't affect our decisions. It doesn't mean material changes. It'll say they'll ask them to do this or this or this. Well, that's where I agree with the SHPO content in here, but I see that as different than...
There's some areas that were not surveyed yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like the chicken and the egg thing.
Right.
If the landowners won't let them on the property, well, then they can't survey it until after they have their eminent domain.
The three routes that they're looking at, the alternative C, D, and E, only one of those, alternative C, is the one that we looked at our hearings.
And...
Alternative D and E don't even go over on the north side of, or the west side of Kildare, you know, over through the park. Unless I'm reading that wrong, but there's no line going up that way. It's
for us.
And that's a side that hasn't been, the cultural resources haven't been done, and they haven't applied for, they didn't even apply for that, right? That route?
For us, they have not applied for that route here. So it is not their preferred route, and they're not applying for it in EIS either, but they're listing it as an alternative that
mm-hmm.
they've looked at. They have a preferred route, and that's what they're asking for in the EIS.
See, and I also see this as a difference between states' rights and federal rights. The state has the ultimate right to the responsibility to cite this according to state law. If there wasn't, that they had to go get the federal dollars, the EIS wouldn't even be coming into play. And so that's another pinch, that how do you view this legally, that we're drawing a conclusion on something that is still being investigated at the federal level, not on all the routes, but on some of the routes.
I think legally speaking, the commission could say, look, we're not going to issue a decision until you go through that process. If they weren't going after federal dollars and didn't have to go through that process and hadn't testified that that's fully their intent, then we would just be sitting here as a normal siting process.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case.
But what's the deal with the information, though? Because if we already have all the information that's going to be developed and the state mm-hmm. is just more efficient in putting this together, mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with going ahead and voting on this. If there's new information that's going to come out because of the federal, and they talk about it in here, about they're doing more studies and more of this and that. If there's new information that's going to come out, then that's information that it'd be nice to have before we make a decision. So how do you view that information being developed now? Is it new, or is it stuff they already have that they're working through the bureaucracy?
Well, how I would first view it is the stuff that's coming out now isn't even part of our record yet or at all. We could potentially take notice of those proceedings or supplement the record if we needed to, but it's not part of our exhibits or anything for the hearing.
Can I ask about that, Mitch? Mm-hmm. Even though we asked questions about the follow-up that the SHPO was going to be doing and the Chris Miller, you know, many times referred to this supplemental draft ES, and we talked about receiving it, what do we have to do to put this, make this part of the record?
I would have to, there's two options, and I think the latter one would be the one we would have to go. You could potentially just take notice of it. The second one would be to supplement our record, which is similar to what we did in the Courtney Wind Farm.
But we didn't specify that we wanted those as late filed exhibits. Mm.
So we could have asked for a late filed exhibit of it.
Hmm.
And it looks like we didn't.
Well, and that's the part.
There was some discussion about whether this should have been a late filed exhibit, really? At the hearing, and everybody kind of basically had thought it wasn't going to be.
The problem.
The timing was uncertain at the time of the hearings, and usually we don't have late filed exhibits when it's unknown when and if the document's exactly going to be ready.
Yeah, and then the other problem was that it meant we couldn't do anything with this case until the late files all came in. So it precluded, if we'd made it a late filed exhibit, I think it precluded us from issuing an order pretty much.
Well, and when you read this, too, the consultation process could go a long time still.
And this is a draft.
Well, and, yeah, Julie's point is right on. I mean, I've got a lot of experience with this on the other guy's side, and this can go on a long time. I'm just concerned that we'd get ahead of ourselves not knowing what this new information is, and then we need to see this new information before we'd make a defining that this is not going to impact something, because we don't know that. I mean, in 4-38, they talk about the final determination of impacts on cultural resources will be made. Results of these evals and surveys would be used by Basin to determine the final alignment of transmission line. I mean, they talk about that specifically. They talk about all those things that we know could be out there. If it was just a matter of saying, I'm for this, they have to do a FONSI and get to know impact, I think that'd be a whole different than this debate about the route. But yet I'm not eager just to keep dragging things on if there's no new information coming.
Well, I think the way I was looking at that is at some point through the EIS process, there's going to be a decision of what the preferred route is, or if none of them are preferable. So there'd be some sort of decision. I know nobody likes to call it that, but that's, I guess, the way as a lawyer we talk, some result of that process, which may be the route and corridor we're evaluating may be something different. So the question would then become, if they get through that process and have a finding of no significant impact on this route that we're dealing with, would the commission rather wait until that is made or act before that finding is made?
Speaking for me, my gut would be to move as far as we can, in long making sure we're staying on good footing, to where if we could tighten this up a little bit, that somehow that says, based on the information in the record right now, we believe, boom, boom, boom. And if the record gets supplemented or something, then maybe it alters our decision. Rather than just making a, maybe we should start walking through the order, but rather than just making a statement that says, you know, there's no reasonable alternative because of this. Well, the information we have right now says that, but if something changes, I don't want to box us into that.
In that case, what I'm hearing, you know, the only next step for the commission really is to issue an order or not issue an order. And if that order is going to have to be that we approve, deny, or modify the route and corridor, that's really the options that are out there as the final result. And if we think that's still subject to additional information in the EIS process, I would recommend holding off on issuing an order.
I see.
But in any of our sightings, isn't it always clear that if in the process they run into something, that's significant, they make alterations.
Mm-hmm.
And so wouldn't that be the case here, too, if we approved this and in, you know, like the study on the with the landowner that hasn't granted access or anything else they would find, if there is something significant, that's built into our orders that changes things, isn't it?
Yes. The difference would be here, you know, if you're dealing with, look, if SHPO finds you need to avoid this cultural resource from mile marker 2 to mile marker 4, everything basically gets built the same way, and then they get a reroute around that change. And it's more of how the commission thinks, but in the EIS process, if they approve a route that's, you know, miles of the line outside and around and changes the whole kind of nature of the line, then it's quite different.
And can you, Jerry, explain a little more what impact a decision from North Dakota would have on the federal process and kind of giving them some guidance how much weight our approval of a site would carry?
I don't know how much weight it carries other than that they're aware that the state permit has already been issued. It's a factor in their findings to find that there's what the impact is. They don't necessarily have to find that there's no significant impact.
You can offset with mitigation.
Yeah, they could find that there are significant impacts, but if you do this, then they'll be mitigated. And that's why the language reads like it does in our order there about we have to file their resulted findings.
And that's precisely what happened with the wind farm, is that they had to mitigate a whole bunch of other property that wasn't even anywhere in it, but that was outside of our purview, but that was one of the things they had to do to get to the FONSI. So those kind of things could...
What about this adverse effect term? It's where they say here, the authority to make a finding of adverse effect resides solely with Western RUS and U.S. Forest Service. It is contingent on the alteration of historic property's qualifying characteristics in a manner that would diminish these aspects of integrity and or criteria of eligibility that apply. So they've declared this Kildare Mountain Battlefield eligible for the National Register.
I think the study was supposed to determine if it was eligible.
They're assuming it. They made an assumption.
There's a monument sitting there that is kind of the battlefield, the center of the battlefield. That's been recognized already, I think.
Yes.
But the idea now is whether or not to expand that area all the way south and around into a bigger area. And my understanding is they're going to study it to determine if that's what they should do.
In the Kildare Mountain Battlefield area, there is this proposed study area, and there's also, I believe it's that 1 acre registered spot that's about 3/4 mile north of the proposed route and corridor.
Yeah, I get that. Here it says, Western will propose to the North Dakota SHPO and other consulting parties that the Kildare Mountain Battlefield be treated as eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places for the purposes of Section 106 review of this undertaking. So there...
Where are you at, Commissioner?
3-74. So, I mean, it all comes back to this, in this particular section, which seems fairly critical in the whole consideration of Kildare Mountain Battlefield, whether they determine adverse effect seems pretty significant to me.
Yeah, I think what they're saying here, okay, is they've got this study area that's supposed to kind of define the limits of where the battlefield is, and I don't think they know what the definition of that area will be yet, because that's why they want to have the study. Is that...
Yeah, well, there's really three areas. There's where the monument is.
Yep.
There's the core battlefield area, or I forget what they're calling it. Is that what it, core battle? And then there's the broader study area. Yeah. They're fairly confident that it seemed like that the big study area is larger than where the actual core battlefield was. And so it seemed like they're trying to decide, you know, how much the location of the current, you know, route impacts that core battlefield area, which is far bigger than that monument area. The monument is just a small.
But it's interesting, though, because you're right, Julie, because I read through that. But then they contradict themselves back to the other side on 368, talking about the tribal statements. And you know, the tribe acknowledges that because the battlefield is owned by private landowners,
right,
the state and federal government have little authority to protect this site. So they, one hand they say, we're going to do this. But the other hand, they reaffirm that it's a private property issue. So
yeah, I don't know how they rectify that. Well, if they determine that, you know, the adverse effect issue on private property.
No, if a person owns private property that's classified as, you know, on the National Register of Historic Places, that person can still essentially do what they want with their own property. So that's, I guess, kind of the difference. And this was testified to at the hearing that even with if the power line's approved, it still wouldn't take it out of consideration for National Register of Historic Places. It would, I guess, from a legal standpoint of the siting criteria, it would put it in a different category than, I guess, where it presently stands.
Sure. Is that a finding that even though it's law that we should put in this if we go that way, that reaffirming that private property rights have, you know, more weight than most anything? Or is that
if it were on the National Register, I think it would be an exclusionary.
It'd be an exclusionary.
Property rights wouldn't matter.
But it's not.
No, it's not.
But it could be. But it, no, actually, it probably never can be because it's a private property place now, correct? It's not like you can put it on there retroactively. Either it's on at the beginning or it's...
No, it's the goal of the study is to, well, at least as testified to, was to get it registered on the National Register of Historic Places. It can still be registered even though it's owned privately.
Got it. Okay.
Well, they do say in here that...
From a study, they can't just declare it, though, correct? They would have to actually get permission from the landowners to do a study to provide some reason to register it?
Yeah, there's criteria to it. I don't know exactly what they all are, and if it would be a study or something else to basically establish its historic significance in such a way as to define it and get it registered.
And part of that is maintaining that, which is why they're trying to prevent this from going through, is part of it is maintaining the integrity of the location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association of the location. So that's why the folks who are opposing this are opposing this line.
Okay.
But
do you folks mind if we just start going through the order a little bit just so we can see if there's any other, we know this is a big point of discussion. If there's anything else that jumps out as we go through this a little bit. Randy, okay with you?
Okay.
Julie? Okay, well, Mitch, do you want to walk us through?
We have one more thing on this. Do we have any sense of when this record of decision will be? And is that the only thing? Is that what the official conclusion to this process is, a record of decision?
I think that we should see it this spring.
And what does that provide? Like
at the hearing, they said they were expecting it, I believe, in March of 2014, and I don't know what the current status of that is.
Yeah. Will that be the completion of all the consultation with the tribe and all of that, the SHPO work, all of that will be done when there's a record of decision?
It has to be, all those things. Before you can sign a ROD, they close all the loops up. But once the record of decision is signed, there's people still have appeal rights and all those things like always.
Yeah.
So I assume that to be the case, but I don't know for sure.
Well, the thing that leads me to want to give this a little bit more time to develop is that when we had our hearings, all this Kildare Mountain Battlefield stuff was only a week old. So there really wasn't that much time to get a good public record for us in our decision in 5 days before our hearings. And that process, and a lot has been fleshed out since then. In this document, there's certainly a lot more information, but then I got more confused because they took two different routes that we didn't even look at. So
Jason is trying to do a EIS for a whole bunch of other things that may come back to us in other projects. That yeah. Then they'll have record a decision that says this is. So then it'll be put in a box that has a rod that says build it this way, and then we'll be going off to do hearings, knowing that the feds have already approved a certain route. It'll be the flip side of this, right?
Yeah.
And that
well.
I don't know if that was one of the drivers for the up or supplemental EIS, but at the hearing there were some complaints that in the original EIS they hadn't provided any real alternatives.
Right.
It was basically just the one line.
So how much, you know, credibility do you give that? Did you find those complaints legitimate? When we asked Chris about that, because I asked him several times about, you know, what do you say to these complaints that people are asking about, the saying there you haven't studied the alternatives, and he pointed to this. We are studying the alternatives. They're here.
Yeah, the credibility I would give that, I don't know if I would use that term to it, is I would think that the EIS process itself has to satisfy that group has to satisfy itself that they've had enough alternatives. It's not necessarily if Basin thinks they've given enough or if the people don't think they've given enough. Mm-hmm. It would be if that group thinks it's sufficient alternatives so that they can evaluate the application.
And again, that's the federal requirement. We don't have a requirement for, they have to look at alternatives, but we don't have to, there's not a lot of specific requirements to all requirements for alternative study, is there?
We accept
no, except if it's cited within an avoidance area, any portion of it, we have to make a finding that there's no reasonable alternative.
I see. So when it gets to the exclusion and avoidance areas, that's, well, exclusion areas we can't
do. In the avoidance area, we have to, if it's going to, the route is going to pass through an avoidance area, we have to find no reasonable alternative.
But we could issue a permit aside from that, without having, you know, there's no specific criteria for what means, like, you, what is a, you know, thorough study of alternatives or not. We don't have a lot of specific requirements on that.
Not like you have to check all this or check all that.
Right.
It's more through the questioning at the hearing and the application. Mm-hmm. And you know, what I believe, memory serving me right, what Basin testified they did is they took a 6-mile wide area and kind of looked all through there at different places for it, and you know, narrowed it down to the one they're requesting approval for. And so during our hearing process, if we're asking questions about that, you know, we could find, look, it looks better to us that the south looks better or north mm-hmm. looks better, and we want some more information on that. And you can develop an alternative route through the hearing process as a result of that.
So just to tie it up, because I was babbling, we are not beholden to the federal alternative route process.
No.
Okay.
But the reality is the company can't get their money unless they
right.
call. It's, we had no work.
This project is beholden to it, but our not process as, does not
absolutely.
Require that.
Yeah, that's where we have every right to vote, move this forward, and if we think everything's fine, to approve it. And then that's up to them. So that's why I wanted to set that up. Of the real backdrop here is we can move forward.
And really where it would go is if for some reason you weren't convinced that reasonable alternatives were explored, in other words, to get around an avoidance area or something. I mean, that's where it could come in. But nothing would say, bam, 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 you have to have four alternatives
right.
before you come to this commission.
So the people who are opposing this couldn't, say we approved it, couldn't take it to court and say that the PSC did not effectively consider alternatives, but for the avoidance areas if they found some there. But they couldn't say you didn't have you're required to have three alternatives and you didn't do it.
Correct.
Because we don't have that requirement. They could complain on the federal side.
We don't have the requirement that alternatives be considered, but we do need to find, if it's an avoidance area, we do need to find that there's no reasonable alternative.
Okay.
And that's, you know, in a broad scope, that's why we always, whenever the routes or corridors touch on an avoidance area, that's why we always ask a lot of questions on that at the hearing.
So if the folks who don't ultimately like the route and want to take the avenue of objecting to the manner in which the alternatives were considered, who would they be objecting against? Are you the USDA?
They would appeal the record of decision.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, I don't know the legal requirements for attacking that ultimate decision.
I've been on the other side of that, and it's just a federal case. But your point, yeah, they can't go after us in that one. Randy, do you have anything before we get through there? Okay. You guys please stop me if there's something that jumps out, but I looked through the page one, and it looked like standard language once you cleaned it up, Jerry.
Can I ask, did everybody see this?
Mm-hmm.
You got something new for us, Jerry?
This was filed with the permits.
I got it.
And it's an update on the Killdeer Mountain Battlefield.
So is this then something that's, when was this filed?
January 30th.
So this would be something that's not part of our record also?
It was with the permits. There were some permits that were filed and then an update of the...
Yeah, it was filed as an update on the permit status, but not as part of an exhibit for our hearings.
No.
Okay.
So if it wasn't an exhibit, it's probably not part of the official record, is what you're saying?
Not unless we make it one.
Okay.
Well, it's an update on what the SHPO requested, and so that's not part of our record?
Well, like I said, I haven't seen this because I'm looking at these four SHPO requirements here, and those are part of our record in the SHPO letter that was entered as an exhibit.
Yep.
So those are in evidence. All of this stuff appears to be in evidence.
So if the letter was part of evidence and it called for future materials coming in, does that become part of the evidence too or not?
Say that again.
The letter was part of the evidence, and the letter called for, you know, the completion of certain things. Do those materials, when complete, then become part of the evidence?
Not if we don't specify them.
Oh, man.
What was the point you're trying to make in this, Jerry? Is there something that jumps out?
No point. Just it's where we're at with the Killdeer Mountain Battlefield stuff. They've done some of what was recommended. The last paragraph on the last page talks about a Section 106 tribal consultation. The tribe selected some consultants that's doing a survey on the route, and that's ongoing right now. But it talks about what they found in the battlefield area. They did a metal detecting survey with the history guys were
archaeologists.
This is the kind of stuff that is no doubt being fed to the people doing the EIS. They're taking all this and giving it. So this goes back to the question: what are they doing in this last part here that is actually may affect us? It's right here. It's a layout of what, and I would assume if they found something, they would tell us in this letter.
They're in the supplemental EIS, I believe what they said, they found two lead balls and then some kind of the smaller ones and then some cartridges that were, at least what was said, was unverifiable as to age and significance.
Mm-hmm. And here it's characterized as Civil War time frame.
It's not some guys out there during season, Jerry. Okay. Well, and I mean, do we want to go through the draft order, Randy and Julie? Because if we have enough, we don't. I mean,
well, what's your goal with going through it?
My goal is to see if there's anything else that jumps out at either one of you two that we should talk about now, so we don't have the next work session and go through it and something else jumps up as an issue.
Okay.
So I don't anticipate it being very long. Quite honestly, I think we've hit the contentious ones. But yeah, the first page seems to be standard language. The second page, Jerry cleaned up some tweaks in there.
These are our corrections to Basin's proposed findings.
Some of it. I asked them for some more information on the exclusion and avoidance area in their proposed order to kind of update it, and I copied that in here too.
Basically, what you can take for it, the red is Jerry's corrections, the blue would be mine.
Okay. I've only got blue.
I saw maybe that on my printer. It was, I don't know, weird.
Oh, maybe. Oh, there's a few red. I take that back. Just hadn't gotten to Jerry's yet. Okay.
And well, these are all red on mine. See,
oh, so the red are mine. Okay.
So your
the
red
ones
and blue
are
is,
Jerry, and the red
I think
ones
you
are
got mentioned. Two different shades of blue.
I got it. It's good.
Okay, so page right. 2 looks like standard language, little cleanup language in there. Page 3, I thought, kind of walked through the same process, talking about the hearings, what exhibits were considered late filed. I didn't see anything there that really jumped out. Page 4.
Well, 1 second on that. See that agency and permit status update? That's Exhibit 34. And this is certainly this document here that Jerry gave us. 31, I'm sorry, is an update to that agency and permit status. So this...
If the company would view that as an update to the agency and permit status, then they should file it as a supplement to their late filed Exhibit 31.
Oh.
Not just as a regular docket filing.
Permits, I see.
That's a great point, Julie. I mean, could you... That'd be preferable if they could file it as a
if
supplement.
If it falls within the exhibit, yeah.
Could you close the loop with them on that, Jerry?
You know, we have a requirement that they file their permits before they start construction, but there's no exhibit numbers to them. I mean, is that...
There's a difference between, for instance...
Is a compliance filing?
We can review anything outside the record and see if we want to supplement the record for our decision on the siting, but... For the decision on the siting, the decision has to be based on the material in the record. You know, moving forward after that, or even during the process, as things are going on, we get lots of information. But our decision on the routing and corridor siting has to be based on the record, not the docket.
Okay, anything else, Julianne, on page 3?
I will note the Exhibit 39, Wisconsin PSC Underground Study. I did read that and learned that underground cabling is not a viable option in this project. It would probably be much more destructive to the landscape and even just physically getting the machines out there and the equipment. It's just... It's impossible.
It would require trenching through the Badlands, and that would be much more invasive than running a pole over the top.
Is that a finding that you'd want to put in here somewhere?
Probably would, actually, because it was something that I thought might be a way to, as a compromise, to deal with some of the view sheds and in require the company to bury it. But I think you'd be doing more environmental damage in requiring that.
That's a good point. And so, yeah, Mitch, if you can put that in there, and if we can, and that doesn't mean we're there, I don't think, but I think it's a good idea to at least talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I just make a little note here and find a place to stick it in.
Okay. All right.
Essentially that we've considered it and it's not feasible.
Yep. Okay, page 3. And certainly we can go through these again. I mean, I think the whole period with Jerry, you can clean this back up and get it back out again.
Next time it comes out, I'll get rid of all of these change things, and then it'll just be changes made from next time you see it.
Yep. And then page four, it looked to be just good background about why the need was there. And I didn't, once again, see anything jumped out there for me. I don't think it'd make changes on it. All right, I'll just keep rolling here. Page five, kind of the same thing, project design. We talked about the poles. Once again, nothing jumped out. Okay, page six. You took out some of the project benefits. Why were those taken out?
I took it out because we normally don't put that in, but I could leave it in if you want. That's why I left this language, so you could see that I was taking it out.
Well, I don't know, because certainly we've done different things. You know, I don't like when it says Basin is the best company in the whole wide world and have those kind of statements in there, but doesn't this go back to the need somehow in this thing of the balance and timing, and or how do we...
It's questionable whether need is something we're considering.
Good point. This is not like a PCNN or something, is it?
But we can. It does not hurt to have it in. If you
I don't know. I just brought it out there as a...
They certainly presented evidence to the need, and it wasn't objected to.
Well, I was thinking about the needs, some of those stats, too, and maybe...
It's not one of the citing criteria.
No. But, boy, when you started hearing some of the demands out there, I don't know if that should be included even in number four.
One of the things that...
Versus under the...
Could it be in a finding? Could it be in a finding of fact?
Yeah.
When I started... This is a finding. When I started taking it out, I started looking at long-term state and local tax revenue and thought, well, we don't need to talk about that.
Right.
And then I got looking at it some more and thought, well, actually, we don't need to even talk about anything in this paragraph. But to the extent that you want to, we sure can.
Maybe just pare it down just for the next discussion. Instead of using terms like additional low-cost generation, just increasing need for generation and, you know, some of that more generic energy demand terms.
Because
that's the driver.
Yeah.
I don't know if I find the right spot to put it. I would look
at number four under findings of fact, and it seems like it belongs somewhere there under...
Expand upon that a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Jerry, can you do your magic there?
For finding... Yeah, okay.
Okay, citing criteria, corridor, route. I like what you did there, actually changing the... taking out the part about the 10% in length. I think that added anything.
Yeah, we've kind of gone away from that.
Why was that ever part of it?
It's in our rules. And
that's huge.
Yes, it would be.
And it says in our rules that the commission may designate a different corridor. And we just started designating different ones.
Well, when you combine corridor and route, it's a little different too. I mean, if they're seeking a specific route, you don't need as wide a corridor.
Yeah, it makes more sense in separate proceedings, but you know, like I said, we've gone away from that. It seems nowadays we want our corridors narrower rather than wider.
Well, for a 300-mile line, it'd have to be 30 miles wide.
Or maxes at 6.
At a maximum.
Oh, it maxes. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I see.
But still, it does seem crazy.
Yeah.
6 miles and...
If you were doing this the way they had envisioned and doing the corridor and then going back for a route within the corridor, the wider the corridor was, the more options you'd have on where the route goes.
Mm-hmm. But I'm fine with you leaving it at that, Julie. Mandy, you okay with that? Okay, page 7. Yeah, I thought that was fine. The only thing about page 7 is I just would caveat 17. I don't want to go through that with all of us together. Maybe that's the crutch of the discussion, I think, about the no reasonable alternative and how that ties into it.
I don't think... I'm not quite there yet with the... There are no reasonable route alternatives.
Right.
Well, this is just... On this one is the... And 17 is just the Little Missouri Grasslands Management area. See, there's A, B, C, D, E, F, and then there's paragraphs to talk about them afterwards. Yep. But and this is language I asked them to give us some more on. If we're going to let them cross those avoidance areas.
Okay, I see your point, Jerry.
We need to find that there's no reasonable alternative, and just to say it without evidence to find it wasn't enough.
Right.
Well, then maybe I misread some of this, Jerry. Not maybe, I think I did. Okay, so you're saying...
I think that... Are you suggesting that we don't want to get into the killdeer part?
Yes.
That's not here. 21 okay. Or something like that.
Yeah.
This is going okay. up there.
This is the stuff over by the park.
Okay, then I think it would be worthwhile to have the discussion today. Let me caveat that back. Okay.
I thought these were fine.
Okay.
Well, to me, I'm curious how... the alternative routes that they're looking at in this EIS meet the need. Because there's no loop in the newer routes. There's no one side of the Badlands and the other side of the Killdeer Mountains. It's just over there on the Killdeer Mountain side. Well, so, to me, I that's my biggest thing. Because if you can do it and have it be cost effective and address the needs that Basin has and serve and have the reliability and all of that, what, then why wouldn't you skip the park?
I think that there was an alternative to go around the Killdeer Mountains on the east side, and now that's changing to an actual route.
What? That reminded me of what some of the testimony was about why the change in the EIS, too, because when Basin originally applied, it was for this route and corridor, and one of their alternatives was that loop that went up and around, I think, towards the Wofford City area. As things developed, it kind of became, we plan on building the one we're dealing with here, but we also plan on building that loop because we need the additional power supply and to regulate the flow of the power up there. So that was the complaint. It was, you haven't proposed alternatives here. You plan on building both of them. And at least as far as the time of the hearing, the status was they planned on building this one plus that loop that went up. Started right. east of the Killdeer Mountains and ended up somewhere around Wofford City, and that was the Garden Creek substation issue, and they pulled the substation, but they do still plan on building that, what they were calling the North Loop, too.
So but was this... Go ahead, Randy.
Wasn't the testimony, though, that regardless whether that one, that whether the other alternative that we're not dealing with that goes north of Killdeer and then comes into Wofford from the east, whether that gets built or not, this one was the one that they specifically needed because they need that tie-in with that substation
Charlie Creek.
By Grassy Butte. Yeah. And once you're there to get the power north, that this was the only route
yes.
through the yep. avoidance area.
That north loop is intended more to just serve kind of, how would you phrase it, Jerry? I mean, help more in that. I mean, as I recall, it was just to help more in that Wofford City area. They realized they need more power there that, or we're going to need more power there that wasn't served with the power still going all the way up to Tioga on this
wasn't
line.
There one of the co-ops yeah, that was over there and was one of the co-op guys that testified
yeah.
was really needed that loop too, the additional loop that's going in up there for his load growth.
Well, I realize.
Regardless of that one, this one
yes.
you said was essential.
Yeah. To
and the first one, I think though that all they had was that alternative loop, and then the no alternative, not build it. I might be wrong, but as I'm recalling, and so they were taking that one buildable one alternative and say they were going to build it too,
yeah.
and so that required them to. Do a new EIS draft with some new alternatives added.
Well, so I know I'm getting away from the application, but this does muddy the water, these routes that they are exploring here, because only one of them is the one that we've looked at. And I'm very curious if this, what they're proposing here, which does tie into the Charlie Creek, it just doesn't go north then, it just ties into Charlie Creek and then goes around the Killdeer Mountains to the east and over to Watford and then up to Williston. I'm curious if that will meet all their needs or if they're still going to be coming back and building and siting the route down through the park.
I think this is one of their alternatives now.
ES-13.
They were forced to put some alternatives in and they went this way as one of the alternatives, but right. They don't intend to build it.
What if that's the only one they get approved?
Where's Killdeer at? Here. So they're going to come like this.
Okay, but that's not one of these. It's not one of the alternatives that's part of this study.
I think that it's very unlikely that they'll approve something besides the preferred route.
This one?
Yeah.
Which does both.
I think that the requirement is that they do some alternatives in the process. And so they're giving them some alternatives that they're not seriously considering them.
Bay meaning basin.
Yeah. That's why they brought this one forward for a state permit.
I see.
Didn't bring anything else. This is the one they want.
Yeah, at least what Basin's preference would be from the hearing is this route, and then probably later they would build that loop, the north loop.
Okay.
In the past, we have been out in front of the NEPA processes, mainly because the NEPA processes take so long.
Mm-hmm.
And we get our permit issued, and then they're waiting on their NEPA stuff to get their construction going. And so when that NEPA permit's finally issued, they've been standing around with their hands in their pockets for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of just been the practical way it's gone.
And I'm still for that, Jerry, just that a power line is different than a wind farm.
Well, what I understand is in this one there are some significant issues.
Yeah. But as we talk through this, though, Julie makes a very compelling argument, if you wanted to make it, to continue to move forward and make a vote on this, because you're saying, hey, let's sit back and look at the facts. This is probably the only thing that meets the requirement.
Well, no, I don't know that. I'm not saying that. I have a huge question in my mind. If
when you start looking
alternative
at
C is the only one that meets the requirement, or if D and E meet the requirement too, and they'd have to be coming back and looking to go through the park again, or if they can still serve Watford City with alternative D.
And, I'm not sure on those alternatives where the Forest Service lines up with them, because they wanted them to go through there on this route.
And the costs, I don't think the costs were part of the comparison of alternatives. So I have no idea what the cost difference is between D and C. But I looked pretty closely at the other comparisons, and it was hard to distinguish. Again, and it didn't get into reliability either. Cost and reliability, which are the whole reason. The reliability is a whole driving factor of this project. But so if you can deal with the reliability in an effective way and not go through the park, I guess I'm not sure why you wouldn't do that. Unless you're creating a whole bunch of different environmental issues on the eastern side with the Killdeer Mountains, and which are equally beautiful. And so anyway, how can we get answers to those questions, or is that not part of this deliberation?
Well, I think we can get answers to them. I think that would take delaying a decision until that the NEPA process works itself out.
Well, I'm even just from the company as to what are the shortcomings from a reliability standpoint of the alternative D, because the NEPA process doesn't cover that.
Well, with those, I don't know what exactly they'll say, but my experience is that they'll come out with and once again, NEPA is completely different than what we're doing.
Yeah.
But they'll come out with this is their preferred alternative, which they've made, and then they'll have all these other alternatives. They'll say in their final EIS why those are not carried forward. And so they'll give you the reasons. Now, they may be answering different questions to the federal bodies than they would ask to us. That's where the difference in data gap might be, where the Federal Fish and Wildlife Service might not be interested in reliability, where maybe we would be. But that's not – it doesn't gel that way. It's different processes. Because like Jerry said, they have a preferred alternative to meeting all their requirements, but their answers for not bringing other alternatives forward would be different to those groups than they would be to us. That's what we're just acting on, the one piece. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even to Commissioner Kalk's point, I mean, if we were sitting here today and for whatever reason we knew that the NEPA process resulted in they didn't like the route and corridor we were evaluating, this commission could still approve that route and corridor, regardless of that it might not be very practical since they can't build it anyway.
Right. But right. I mean,
it's... they're independent, but they deal with a lot of the same information because you're dealing with the same area.
Well, I'm not real interested in coming up with a decision just because we can on the route that we think is best if it's not going to be feasible from an environmental standpoint and from the federal permitting standpoint.
And that's somewhat what I'm hearing, and I don't know...
No, I don't think that's the case yet. I just...
Well, am I hearing... I'm just wondering if we... Should we keep going through the order? I mean, it's up to the commission, but do we need to decide whether we want to wait till that process is over before issuing our order, or...
back to your question, Mitch. I think there's some value here of... Let's get through the order here and hit the high spots.
I think it's very much, because I think there is value in moving forward.
Yeah, I'm not convinced in delay. My experience tells me I don't want to wait till the full NEPA is done. But I want to make sure I better understand what the PSC vote is than I do right now. So it doesn't mean that we couldn't come back 2 weeks from now and move a vote forward on it. I just had some of these detailed questions that I wanted to walk through and see, quite honestly, where my colleagues are at on some of this. Because I do know the NEPA process looks at things completely different than what we do. Yep. And it muddies the waters, and they come out with all these preferred alternatives that there aren't really preferred alternatives for our process, but they are for somebody else's process, which was my caveat in the beginning about all the different holes.
Yep. Yeah, like I say, NEPA requires them to present some alternatives.
We used to have to put NEPA alternatives, and there was only one alternative, to build a flight line here. That's the only alternative, but you'd have to put
make something up.
Well, that's what the NEPA process allows for.
Yeah.
And their criteria is much different than, it's an environmental criteria that's different than ours.
Well, and I guess I would like to know what the practical shortcomings of the alternatives are, which you don't get through this. So, in terms of cost and reliability.
Yeah, and I apologize for bringing it up again, but the reason I ask is because the legal part of it is we do have our record, which is
absolutely
what this decision has to be based off of. And if we're going to use any of that other stuff, it's got to either be supplemented or some other legal way to get it in for consideration.
Okay. All right. Well, we kind of got sidetracked, but it was good discussion. So we were on page 7 about the alternatives to the grassland. Maybe what we'll do is, I don't know that we can, I think each individual read through these, and I think it's not worth too much time for us to discuss that. When I look through the remaining ones, I guess page 9, there was a lot of information in there, nothing very out of the ordinary. July 20 or 25th, page 10, that's one that I'll want to spend some time individually with Mitch trying to make sure I understand. That's, I guess, the crutch of where I might be on a vote on this, is if I fully understand this and think it's the right thing, then I'm probably ready to vote on it. The issues that I guess I wrote down and that I really hadn't hit on was the airport part of it. I think the way the language was such – Is there any other comments that you, Mitch, would have, or Jerry, about the airport in Williston? I like the way you wrote in there about how they'd have to come back with approval from the city on the route. Is there anything I'm missing on that?
I don't think so. I think that's a pretty good summary of it. And I had went back and asked them to write that paragraph for me, too.
Okay. There was some discussion about the Golden Eagles and all that. That part never really fleshed out, but that would be included in some of the Avion studies.
Can you go back a couple of pages after you answer that? I had one short question. But go ahead and answer that.
Yeah, good point on the Eagles. I was going to make a note there and didn't.
Because we had a lot of testimony about that in our record, and we asked a lot of questions about it. And
back up toward the, here we go, number 21. I think I need some eagle findings in this area here.
Yep. Because I know that the NEPA includes a lot of things, but there are, if we didn't, I like to look at the orders as if we're doing them without NEPA. And then if the NEPA gives us something to look at, then that's another way to, another tool to bring in. But we should be putting our own thoughts in there, just exactly like that, Jerry. Yeah. Okay, he'll do that. Randy, what did you have?
Go back to 26.
26.
The number is yellow. It was 24, and now it appears to be. It would be 26.
Okay.
Just the last sentence, easements obtained in area. Is that the easements have been attained in the area, or
it's
what
a
are
note.
We saying there?
It was a note to me to try and find out if I can get somewhere in the record what the status is for easements in the Kildare Battlefield area. I think that Brian had brought it up at one time.
We have that.
The yellow
in the
just indicates that's a question that you need
and
to get.
And so,
resolved.
Yeah, so I'm back in the transcript now looking for it.
Well, isn't that what we have in, I don't want to get it on 25, it Basin Electric has acquired easements on 7.5 of the 8 miles through the study, through the proposed study area, but or no, the B study area. Isn't that answer? Isn't that the answer to your question?
Was it?
Well, I don't know.
That was my recollection from the hearing, was 7 or 7.5 out of the 8 miles through the Kildare.
You may have the answer to your question, Jerry.
Okay.
It says that in like about the 7th or 8th line of 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it.
And then maybe if there's an update to that since the hearing, that would be.
I don't think we can use it.
No, but you could ask them, Jerry, because I will tell you that if they could supplement the record saying they had all their easements and all that mile,
Yeah, we can check with them. I suspect that's not the case from my recollection of the area that was not grant that did not have an easement on it. I believe that person testified or one of their relatives did about concerns in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I would need to see if the 7.5 out of 8 is what it said back in there too.
Okay. All right. I don't have anything else. I don't. Your conclusions. I mean, we went through the order, and it's very standard. We talked about SHPO concurrence letter. I think that has to be in there. The battlefield study we've talked about. And I talked in there about the airport. So.
On 30, Mitch, I was going to ask you, why did you want to take tribal representatives out of there?
Where are you at, Jerry?
Because what I recalled off the top of my head, and I was going to talk to you about that, Jerry, was that they hadn't really started that process at the time of the hearings, but were going to be doing it as part of the supplemental EIS, so I didn't think at the time of our hearings that our record reflected that. Could double check that though.
I'll check it.
I thought that was one of the complaints actually.
Okay. So in next steps, Jerry, you'll incorporate some of the thoughts we've had today. Get that back out. Mitch, if you have some time whenever we're done here, just sit down and talk with you some more about some of the detailed questions.
I do.
Randy or Julie, there's something particular you want to focus Mitch and Jerry in on that we haven't talked about, or not to reinforce it so we can all get it clear?
I heard Julie's wanting to know more about Alternative D.
Okay.
Well, I would like to, but it seems to me that we have the route that we've considered in the hearing.
The only
and
way
that's what we have to look at. Yeah. I mean,
the only way it would be in our record was is if this one truly isn't minimal adverse effects because there's something else that's better.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we in that way, our option is just to turn down this one and tell them that.
But we never compare and contrast orders. It's either accept or reject. You can't pick the best of two. You accept or reject any of our orders.
You know, I think that's true, but we've kind of went around it a couple of times and said, well, you're approved everywhere except for here, and we want you to come back and show us some what happens if you go south or, you know, in this area.
But those are along a general route, not a wholesale different project.
Well, and
isn't our record and the public testimony that we got on it based on this route? And they looked at some alternatives. And, yeah, those might look rosy because there's no one objecting to those alternatives because we didn't have a hearing on those alternatives.
No, that's
but
right.
Yep.
Those were kind of found to be not feasible by the company. And so they applied for this one of their alternatives. So I don't have to spend lots of time looking at those when we didn't have a hearing on them. I don't know that we are able to gauge much of what the real opposition to them would be.
This kind of, to me, comes down to the question from the legal perspective is, you know, to the commission is, have they met their burden to you? Are you convinced from the testimony that they gave and about the alternatives considered when it deals with avoidance areas of whether they met their burden, that there's no reasonable alternatives? And The one late filed we have was to map us out kind of the exclusion avoidance areas in that 6 mile mm-hmm. corridor so we could take a look and see if we were convinced on that issue.
Yeah, that was the, you requested that, Ryan, for
I think it was late filed 40.
Give us some alternatives around Kildare.
Mm-hmm. What was it? Well, I remember there were, they did expand a bit on some of the other alternatives in their materials, so I'll go back and look at those. There might be more information about the shortcomings of those other routes in there.
Okie doke.
I have a kind of a
yes,
short
sir?
Line of questioning on,
absolutely.
So I can figure out which is a cart and which is a horse here.
Okay.
The federal study and the talk of the battlefield being on the historic registry, does that eventually getting on the historic registry, whether this is built or not, is that hinging on the NDSU study that was talked about in the hearing? Is that the study to determine whether the whole thing goes on the registry or what?
My understanding is the NDSU study would try to determine if there's a case for it. And if so, that would be submitted to the gods of historical preservation, and there would be some kind of officially adding it to the register if they, whatever their process is for that. But
yeah, they testified their goal of that study was to get the information to take it to the State Historical Society to have them hopefully apply for it. A historic designation for some boundaries of the Kildare Mountain Battlefield.
And is that something for us to be waiting on? Is there, I mean, someone having some money and a willingness to do a study doesn't get them on someone else's land, but is there anything in our record that indicates with any amount of certainty that there's even going to be a study?
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
Well, but the way I would answer that question is that by having the last point that the SHPO concurrence needs to be filed with us. The SHPO concurrence, let them be the experts in that part. If the SHPO gives us their concurrence, they've deliberated on that part of it, and they've said they're fine with it, or they're not fine with it. So I would view that if the SHPO gives mm-hmm. the project concurrence, that they, as experts in that field, have met their requirements to give us that. Because the I don't know that we'll ever be able to answer your question, but that's their expertise area. Okay. That's one person's viewpoint of it. Because I wrestle with that question a lot myself. Because that's why we have them.
Well,
and the public, yeah. The private landowners too. I mean, where that all comes.
I mean, I could put it this way. I think that process is a ways off. I mean, certainly for whatever time of our order, I don't think this would be considered a registered historic place.
And there's a lot of disturbance on there already, that they outline 18 farms and another transmission line and roads and oil rigs, and so it's not like it's pristine today.
Didn't I read in the supplemental somewhere that whether this power line is through there or not, it does not affect whether it'll be listed in the Register of Historical Places?
They testified to that.
So that's the other complete flip side, is whether they put the power line there or not, it still could be there.
Yeah, but I don't know how much credit we can give that testimony. I mean, whoever makes the determination will look at everything.
Yeah.
I see your point.
Yeah, I think maybe more accurately describing testimony is they didn't think it would affect it because of all the other stuff that's already on the property. Yeah. I think it's probably how the testimony came out.
Background thing.
Actually, I thought I read it in this somewhere else in the supplemental.
It could be there. I know at the hearing what was testified is, and I think it was even...
If you find that would be good.
Well, I think there is.
Again, maybe
I think there was essentially agreement between the people who were contesting Enbasin that the power line itself wouldn't prevent it from being on the National Register. It would be something that's looked at, but the power line itself wouldn't exclude it from consideration.
Okay.
Integrity of the site is something they consider.
Yeah.
I cut you off, Randy. Do you have the other questions you said?
One other, just procedural one. So, Basin kind of writes a proposed order, and Jerry made some changes. Mitch made some changes. We're recommending some changes. Do we leave the company from that point out of the loop until we're ready to take our own action, or are they aware of the changes, like the two of you have proposed? That, you know, maybe we're changing something because we think it just reads better and isn't even significant, but it did hold some significance in their minds.
At least what my practice is I don't send my changes to the company, but what we'll essentially do is fact check with them to make sure we haven't changed some factual thing that's just clear. Not so much as should we include this, should we not include this, but... You know, can you verify for us that this is, you know,
that's the kind,
you know,
of, what I mean? That's
like kind of fact checking, like not really things that we would debate about policy or the actual ultimate decision, but fact checking type of more basic things. I don't know. I guess Jerry, what your process is?
When we get further along, I'll make sure that everything's right.
We prefer it's right as we go forward, Jerry, but there's a lot of changes in it.
You know, there will come a point where we've got a more final draft.
Yeah.
And then I'll just make sure that we don't have any serious problems if I can.
Okay. Do we have the ability to schedule our next work session today with the five of us here? Just to put a placeholder out there? Julie, do you have your calendar? Are you able to do that, Jules? Mitch, are you able to do that?
I am.
Okay, so, Jerry, you figure you need a week or so to tweak some of this stuff up?
Sure.
I'll just let you know I'm on vacation the 13th through the 21st.
Okay. Well, how about the 28th? I see a big block in my nothing that day. Maybe that means everybody else is busy.
I'm out of town that day.
Okay. When do you come back again, Mitch?
I'll be back the 21st, so starting the 24th, I usually leave a few days open after that, so
I'm
fairly open that week.
Can we look at the first week of March?
Sure. I'm open the 3rd and the 5th.
Let's see here.
I'm not on the 5th, and then the 3rd, you know, we had left two options for that James Valley.
We're not going to do that.
No. We won't have that now because I don't think because of the
formal complaint.
Yeah.
Okay. So the 3rd is available.
I'm open the 3rd.
Yep, me too.
Jerry?
3rd, yep.
Same kind of time, 1:30-ish? Or 1:30? Does that work for everyone? Just it's a Monday again, so we got
sure.
the mornings to recool. Mitch?
Works for me.
Jerry, Julie, yep.
Sure.
Randy?
Yep.
Daryl, can you do that for us? 1:30 on March 3rd, work session on case number PU 11-696. Okay. Mitch, anything else for the good of the order?
I have nothing else.
Jerry?
I'm good.
Julie?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Randy?
Well, at one point, Mitch was, I think, kind of looking for some direction or feeling from us on how we want to handle this. So I'll lay out kind of where I feel like I'm at with it. I think that us getting everything finalized and approving the corridor, it sounds like, might provide some guidance to the federal process. And our order, I'm confident, would hinge on Basin Electric getting all the federal approvals. So if it turns out that the feds don't follow our guidance and approve a different corridor, then we can work with that at that time. I think if we don't take action, if we just sit back and let the feds dictate this, I think we risk being the excuse probably for federal agencies not taking action, and that, well, you know, your own state hasn't even done anything yet. And I don't think that is the position that I feel like we should be in. I think we ought to get our stuff all in order. We've had good hearings, and make a decision up or down, because, you know, at the end of the day, if we get this, if we find what we think is the best corridor, and we're not going to approve it because we don't want something going through the Badlands there north of Grassy Butte, or we don't want something going through the battlefield, there's really no sense in the company, and more importantly, those customers at the end of the line, basing all this effort, all this time, and their futures on a process if we're going to turn it down anyway. And so I think moving along as quickly as possible, but that we have a good record for our decision, whether it's to approve or disapprove, is the best procedure.
Thank you, sir. Anything else?
That's it.
Julie, any follow-up?
Nope.
Okay, thank you all. We'll go ahead and close the work session on case number PU 11-696. Thank you.